This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Strong string presence. That's what I like.
You gotta credit David Arnold for that.
Ooh, is that a harp?
Yeah, man.
Wow, is that the only time a harp has been in a Bond movie? Don't email.
Oh, they will.
I'm just kidding, guys. I'm just kidding. Turn that down a little bit. Welcome to James Bonding with Matt and Matt.
Yeah, we're doing it.
It's The World Is Not Enough with our guests, Derek Miller.
Hello.
Jeremy Smith. You might know him as Mr. Beaks from Ain't It Cool News, and you might know Derek Miller as...
I don't read anything Quint doesn't write.
Fair enough. Nor do I.
Thanks for joining us, guys.
Jeremy, get up on the mic.
Okay.
There you go. Or pull it towards you. You can move it. Yeah. It's good.
Matt, he wasn't using introducing me, and you cut him off.
Sorry.
You might know Derek from getting upset when he's cut off.
Yeah.
And he's a famous rant of getting cut off. This is James Bonding. It's The World Is Not Enough. Bear with us as we get through this film, talking about this
film. I feel like an hour 45 minutes would have been enough.
For this film?
Yes.
Yeah, an hour and 45 minutes is enough.
It's not even one of the exceptionally long Bond films. Mm-hmm. Boy, does it feel that way.
It does, huh? This is like a director's cut could be like the hour shorter version. Like the only time a director's cut's considerably shorter than the finished product.
Yeah. You're not kidding.
I think that's happened, right?
Has it?
Isn't the director's cut... I feel like the Army of Darkness director's cut is somehow shorter.
Oh, I thought you were talking about a Bond film. They should do some... I'm still holding out for a Quantum... director's cut. I think we can get it.
I'm just holding out for them to release some kind of other edition of Evil Dead.
That's a whole other podcast, man.
Welcome to the show, guys. We're glad to have you on. Let's just talk to you guys a little bit about your lives with Bond before this podcast.
Yeah, because we should mention that these two guys, in their own rights, are kind of Bond experts, and we'll talk about why in a second. But we had a third person who's going to be on, Ken Crosby, who is the Bond expert for the show Beat the Geeks, but he's sick, so we wish him well. Wow. Ken, if you're listening.
Let's have him on with Blaine Kapatch, the last host of Beat the Geeks.
Oh, we should. It's not a bad idea. So, Derek, tell us about your history with James Bond, both personally when you found the Lord and what you did as a professional person that...
I was introduced as a young boy by my grandfather, and I was the kid who always dressed up as Bond for Halloween and stuff, and taped them all off TV, so I had a big stack of all those old VHSs. But yeah, no, I've had a lifelong affinity for Bond. I think the first one I saw, though, in the theaters was Living Daylights with my grandfather.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
And then when I moved to L.A., I'd always been a huge Bond fan and bought all the books and everything else, and then somehow a friend of mine had a job doing the... mail order stuff for the Ian Fleming Foundation, and they needed somebody else. Like, oh, great, part-time job, and I'll get in the Bond world. But then they were also doing the magazine, and I got way involved with that. So we did all the special editions. I got to do the Twine junket, which is we'll talk about later. But it's kind of cool. My name's on every Blu-ray.
That's
in the
great.
Credits.
That's
for
right.
All
for all of those inside documentaries.
In the documentaries.
I've been watching, having known you for a little while now, I would see those things and go, oh, Derek Miller. Every time I see that name, I know a Derek Miller. I never put it together. That was
weird.
Until
whole other life. Yeah. I think I told you I had like an acrimonious split with the guy running it. So I kind of left Bond behind, but I'm letting myself love it again.
Yeah. Well, you went rogue.
I went rogue.
That's what we use the term. Yeah,
rogue.
Yeah.
You'll be back in. Oh, geez. Do not. Do not.
I just already that gives me a thrill that this movie didn't. And Jeremy.
Well, I had an older brother who was very into Bond, so it just naturally became an obsession for me. I'm told my first Bond film in the theater was Moonraker.
I don't remember
that one, though. I vividly remember going to see For Your Eyes Only.
Mm.
And, you know, as a child, that's one that is fairly uneventful.
Yeah.
Although the opening is terrific. Yeah. And so, but that was still enough. I fell in love with Bond right away. And yeah, like anyone else, whenever there's a Bond film on the movie of the week, I was definitely watching it. I rented all of the films many, many times.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where Roger Moore was my Bond early. Mm-hmm. He was my starter Bond.
Yeah. Yeah.
But eventually I found the Lord. I found Sean. And so.
Do you guys... When there was that huge period where you'd have to rent the Bond films or you taped them. Yeah. But I remember being such a Bond fan, but still not knowing exactly how many there were and who did what. And it was kind of a crapshoot by looking at the video cover of, like, which one is this again? I know they're skiing.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you didn't know what to believe because it was also like, you know, when we're a kid, Never Say Never Again, like, well, so wait, there's these other weird things that happen?
I didn't even understand what was going on there. And I remember I got on Her Majesty's Secret Service home one time, and it took me 40 minutes before I'm like, wait, this is James Bond? I couldn't wrap my head around the fact that this guy was Bond. You know.
Well, I always remember one week, the movie of the week was The Man with the Golden Gun.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at that, and it's like Roger Moore, and I'm like, wait, this is a James Bond film. I don't know this movie.
Oh, wow.
And it was like a hidden Bond.
I wish I had that possibility today.
Yeah. There's some out there you've never seen, guys.
Right, because, you know, it was before, like, I was obsessively, you know, combing through, like, movie guides and things like that. So, yeah, you could still kind of accidentally stumble into a Bond movie.
I've had this very recently with Netflix streaming everything. I've recently had a Frasier I'd never seen before, which was super exciting for me. And, and somehow a Star Trek The Next Generation I'd never seen before.
Oh my God.
It was very exciting. It was joyous. It's like they made it for me.
I know. I love Carl Sagan's Cosmos. And circumstantially, I have still never seen the last two episodes. And I almost am saving it for, like, when I know I'm terminally ill.
Yeah.
It's the same way that I know I'm going to try heroin.
Carl, I'm coming.
Yeah. Or it's just, I'm going to make my last week on Earth the best.
We're going to discover the cosmos
just
together.
Just jacked up on smack watching the last two episodes of Cosmos.
That's how he shot them.
So. Guys, update. Someone put a bid in on my other watch I'm selling on eBay.
Oh.
It's an Omega, if anyone's interested.
Is this a Bond Omega?
An Omega.
Yeah, we had this conversation.
Yeah. It's an automatic Speedmaster.
You can adjust headphone levels here.
If I'm too loud, which I often...
Plus, there are donuts if anybody, listeners, want some. We got some on the table here.
Let's sort of jump into The World Is Not Enough. I remember my excitement level for this movie, top notch, because I was coming off of The Beauty of Tomorrow Never Dies.
Do you guys hate Tomorrow Never Dies?
I like it.
I don't mind it either. I think it's kind of a cool movie. It's a big departure.
It's my least favorite Bond
of all of them.
You're
so bizarre.
You're in for a treat when you rewatch
it. Yeah,
I think you are.
But my reasoning on that is because I love a Bond film that goes for broke and is horrible, and one that's great. And
right.
That one just falls so soundly in the middle for me that I get bored. I don't know.
Well, it was the first one after GoldenEye, and I think that, you know, most Bond fans had, you know, we had fallen back in love with Bond, and we were embracing Pierce, and that one just felt fine. It felt like, you know, at the time. But yeah, going back and looking at it, it's a really strong film.
Is it really?
Yeah,
yeah.
It's
really
a decent movie.
I like it too. And it's got a villain that has a plan that is different. Mm. Granted, it's not that different because he wants to start a war. But the reasoning behind wanting to start the war is so that he can cover it in all of his media outlets.
That. Price is pretty decent.
Yeah, Price is good. And Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird, though, too, here. You have GoldenEye, and then you go straight into that where he's partnering up with somebody. It's like, we don't have Pierce yet, and already he's partnering with somebody? Yeah. It's like they didn't really set that in.
It's the only Bond film since Octopussy that I didn't see in the theater.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
Was it because Titanic was out at the same time?
This is a safe place where we can admit some things. Yeah. I was spending all my time watching Titanic end to end.
I remember it was my friend's birthday party, and we would always go see a movie. Like, his mom would take all the kids to go see a movie, and it was Titanic or that. And we ended up seeing Tomorrow Never Dies, which was a delight. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think Star Trek First Contact was out that year, too. Hmm. I think.
What That's
year
a big was weekend.
It? Oh, no. First Contact, 96. This was 97,
was,
correct?
Yeah, this was 97. It was yeah. Toronto, yeah.
So this one, The World Is Not Enough. What year are we talking about?
99. This is 99. 99. 2 years later. Wow. When they were in the rotation correctly.
This is like
and
Phantom
they were hitting
Menace
on that Thanksgiving.
Year.
It was always the November yeah. release. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that was, you know, that was the weird thing about this film coming out in 99, which was such a strong film year, that my excitement for a new Bond film was kind of being matched by my excitement mm-hmm. for all these amazing movies that were, you know, either had come out or, you know, you had Magnolia coming out, you had
right.
Three Kings,
oh, yeah.
you had Fight Club.
Jeez.
And it was like this great...
You're just naming posters I had in my dorm room.
those are the most white guy college dorm room posters ever.
Yeah, so
put Twine next to Fight Club, oh my God.
That's like when License to Kill came out. It was also Batman, Last Crusade.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Ghostbusters 2. That was a huge summer.
The Abyss, summer of 89. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was a tough, yeah. And License to Kill kind of suffered as a result.
Yeah.
Well,
sure.
The Menendez brothers got it.
That's right. We'll talk about it. We have a lot of License to Kill stuff to talk about.
I'm looking forward to it. But today,
when you have Davi in, yeah.
Today we're talking about the third installment of the Pierce Brosnan series, The World's Not Enough. And in a lot of ways, I feel like this might be Pierce Brosnan's best performance.
Wow.
I think it is my favorite.
I think acting-wise,
really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's the least wooden. I think he's... you know what? It might be who he's juxtaposed with very often in this
Whatever
movie.
Whatever do you mean?
Well, we'll get to her.
Oh, I hadn't
but
even
also,
specified it.
He also gets brought up by a couple of people.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. Yeah.
I
Absolutely.
Think this, of all the Brosnan films, has the best acting across the board. And that's taken into account Denise Richards.
Yeah.
But Sophie Marceau and
she
Robert Carlyle are really good.
Yeah. They're great. And Coltrane's, I love him.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's the best Brosnan film. I know that's going to upset some GoldenEye fans out there, but...
All right, so here's the deal, guys. We start in Balboa, Spain, with the brand new museum Frank Gehry designed, which was controversial at the time. I was actually even watching an episode of Frasier last night where they had talked about... Don't worry about it, but they had talked
like
about...
when I buzz-marketed Valencia Orange yes. Refreshers from Starbucks.
But they were talking about Frasier was dating this girl because he had a wonderful discussion about how much they both hated the new art museum in Spain.
Oh, wow. It's so like a Bond movie to go, what's the newest thing?
Yeah.
Let's just squeeze it in a shot.
You know, this movie suffers from a lot, too. Like, just cramming in.
Yeah.
The gadgets feel so forced, and everything's fun. But anyway, this opening sequence...
feel ridiculous.
Yeah. I got some things to say about
this. We talked about this opening sequence. It's the longest one. I thought it was 14. How long is it? Does it
20-something.
Wow.
21, 22.
Longest opening sequence in a Bond film. Because they were going to break it up, right? What's the story behind this?
Yeah, it was supposed to end as soon as he comes out of the window.
Right.
And then... I don't know how no one could write a fucking line for Brosnan to say instead of just looking. Like, I felt like he should have had, sorry, just dropping in or something like that.
That's how it was originally, and then they tested it, and it didn't do well, like opening sequence.
Yeah.
So they brought the boat sequence forward and made it really long. Yeah.
And this is Purvis and Wade's first outing.
Is it? Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is interesting to me. I'm just going to throw this in right away because one of my big things in Skyfall is they're like, we don't want to repeat anything that we've done before, but there's so many things in this that they repeated in Skyfall.
Really?
The blowing up of MI6, the clean bill of health, there's all of these things.
Yeah.
Getting kidnapped or them having a plan against him. And so there's all these things that just repeated again. Like, guys, really?
Yeah. That's kind of the weird thing is that Purvis and Wade kind of came in and they set the template going forward for like what Bond films were going to be and not for the better.
No.
I mean, at least, you know, and when they stayed on for Casino Royale, I mean, that was kind of one of those...
Were you like when Casino Royale came out, like, well, maybe these guys are dipshits? But no.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about this.
Yeah.
That they did these last three Craigs, but there's always been a third writer, and you're going, that has to be that third writer.
Well,
right?
You know, Twine suffers from this too. We keep calling it Twine, everybody. Because this was written clearly Frankenstein together, because like Apted's wife, I think, wrote all the Sophie Marceau stuff. Somebody else did all the Bond's dialogue. Yeah. It's really specific. This movie's like so. Like I said, Frankenstein. There's like all these really disparate parts of it.
It is. It is. It could be a bunch of different movies we're all watching from.
Because Vic Armstrong did all the action stuff. I don't think Apted even touched them in terms of directing them.
The action sequences, I think, are done really well. They're shot really well. I think even the stuff at the Caviar Factory, I think, is great.
It's
silly, but it's great.
That opening, I'll put the opening of this, at least the boat chase, up against any opening James Bond film. It is.
Well, let's jump into the specifics of the opening.
I'm with you to a certain extent, and then I gotta do is just really get something out.
Okay, so listen, Bond is in Spain, and he's there to retrieve money, essentially doing a favor for M's fuck buddy.
Which is another thing I want to talk about. They so unsubtly we get it. You're fucking you, dude. Jesus. How many times does she need to wistfully kind of roll her eyes every time his name comes up?
So he's in there talking to a Swiss banker. We're going to see our first gadget immediately. 3 minutes in, we're seeing our first gadget. And it is a flash grenade in the butt of his Walther.
Yeah, signaled by his glasses.
Yes. Also, he makes a couple nice digs at a Swiss banker.
Yeah, those guys are great, too. That casting in that office is pretty sweet.
Yeah,
it is.
Those guys are all pretty great.
But here's my problem, my first problem. Getting a knife into the back of the spine like that, it's not going to go in all the way.
That's my first note.
I'm just saying.
I'm sick and tired of throwing knives and their effectiveness. You just can't easily throw a knife.
She was right in between the third and fourth vertebrae.
She was good.
No.
Yeah.
She hit the base of the brainstem and it, all the way through. Okay, so... Now we see what I think is the least realistic thing in any James Bond movie, which is the length of this goddamn curtain string.
Yeah.
Hundreds of feet.
That's a Spain thing. They have very long strings.
You guys have seen Venetian blinds, right? Well, these are Spanish blinds.
Spanish people have two customs. They like to nap in the afternoon, and they like to be able to close their windows from three stories below on the street before they get up. Because they know they're heading up to nap, and they don't want to get up there and have the circadian rhythms thrown off by light.
Yeah.
No, guys, this checks out.
Haven't you ever been walking around in Barcelona and get tripped up on
all the hanging curtain?
Yeah. You can literally Tarzan swing down any street.
A lot of people are saying that that's responsible for the economy collapse in Spain right now. They were just spending so much on these curtain strings. Guys, let's take a look at this.
On the contrary, it's a lot of jobs.
So his big plan to escape this building after... So he's a.
I rewound it. I'm like, oh, it really is just the curtain string.
Yeah, yeah. It's
I
not...
watched it with Amanda, and she was like, "What? Could that work?
Could that work?
No.
Yeah, well, it could work, but he'd have to go in the window right below the one that
but
he's
also
jumping out of.
Break his back or the other guy's back or something.
I also like the scene of him tugging on the string.
Yeah,
clearly harnessed. Like, there'd be no way to be
no
tugging.
Slack.
Yeah. Yeah. He's tugging on the string.
A little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he drops to the ground, and people look at him, and then he should have said something, but he didn't. And then now we go back to MI6.
With these terrible titles to this whole movie, too. Whoever the Chiron operator was. I think the titles are terrible. They're just, I don't like the fonts.
Babo Spain.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But they're really bad. They're bad. Quantum, we did that.
Quantum's great.
Nailed it.
It is so good, like right in the floor and stuff. Now we go to MI6 and we see Samantha Bond has really cut her hair down.
I wrote down a note that I like her as Moneypenny quite a bit.
Okay.
I don't know. She just seems to have a little bit of the essence of Lois Maxwell, but a modern gal. You
know? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. He's there. He retrieves the money. There's a fun exchange about cigars because they want to stay current with the Monica Lewinsky scandal, I'm assuming. That's what they're going for there.
It still really works.
Really timeless.
Really
timeless situation. then they have a very fancy money counter, which just scans a pile of money and tells you how much
is
there.
Yeah.
That's what that does. This is now, we have this massive money counter in MI6. But when we need to stop the man, no one has a fucking radio.
Yeah.
No one has a radio. The best she can do is intercom to the next room.
With the wiring ended there.
Yeah, I guess someone else has to yell, and I feel like James would have been able to run. Anyway, so what we see, the way James discovers that, hey, this money, something's going on with it, is... there's something going on with his
chemical
scotch
in it.
Yeah.
And he's touched the ice, which got his fingers wet. I thought that was cool.
I agree.
I like that bit.
I agree. I'm on board.
Clever.
You sound hesitant anything in this movie.
Well, yeah. No, you're right. I'm with you so far. I just know it's coming.
No, it is. It's kind of inventive.
There's some stuff in this, too, where they do try to keep Bond with the sleuthing, like doing detective stuff
throughout
this movie.
Yes.
And I think that's pretty well done in this movie. And I...
sometimes we're going to have a serious discussion about what my real problem with these Brosnans is. I feel like I've got something deeper and I need to get it out, and I'm not exactly sure what
we have to find it out. We're going to bring a therapist in.
We might. Yeah. We might.
Bring Emily back.
Hypnotize you or something like this.
Well, so here's... Now, I think this is a great... I think this is a great device, but doesn't... The part where they've already lost me is I don't understand why this 00 agent is going out to get this money back. Like, I don't understand what the situation is.
I don't either.
Doesn't make any sense
to me.
Well,
it's because all personal, right? Because of
family relationship. I guess so. So the money, he walks in, the lapel pin, you see a magnesium strip in the money ignite.
I like that effect.
Yeah, that was cool. Good. And then it blows up. Well, now what do, right? You look out the window and you see a sniper and a boat. Mind you, this is a consumer boat in the middle of the Thames.
I have this note.
With a 50 caliber machine gun mounted to the back of it in a city and country where the cops don't even carry guns.
Right in the vicinity of MI6.
Yes.
Wouldn't arouse any suspicion.
Not one.
And she's there. She might have had a tarp over it before that.
Whipped it off.
Don't logic me. Don't you dare.
But she's just there to make sure the job was finished.
Yeah.
Just like, did you?
And then we come up on, for some reason, on the 9th floor of MI6, there is a wet dock.
Yeah.
There is a wet dock.
It's the floor for money counting and wet dock.
Yeah, yeah. It's curious to me that would be there.
I don't question Q.
Q gets a pass.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a reason. It's just it's beyond us.
Also, but he could have launched the torpedoes without jumping out the window and ended it right there.
Absolutely.
That's true.
He couldn't figure out those controls. It's brand new.
He immediately figured out those controls and how to tighten his tie underwater.
Yeah, okay. But he was improvising.
That was a Brosnan ad lib.
Yeah. That was very Roger Moore-esque. I enjoyed that.
Give me a second. I got no problem with the tie straightening. It's okay.
I agree.
Roger Moore. It's a nice little joke. I got no problem with the spraying the traffic cops with water.
Yep.
That was not planned.
It had just started.
Oh, really?
The booting. No, the other thing was they were taking it on because it was a huge thing. I guess in England it got a huge laugh because booting had just become a huge thing.
So,
but you see, it was an accident?
Oh yeah, no, I thought it was an accident they were filming because they had cameras set up all over. It was like the sequence was live broadcast on the web at the time.
In 1999?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was like, but I don't know if anyone watched it. Like, I don't even remember this, but I looked this up.
Yeah.
And it was and apparently that was an accident. Oh, but the audience
good information.
Liked it. And if I'm wrong, you guys can...
No, that's all right.
Oh, they will.
But where does... so now you don't have a problem with that?
No.
And then where's the problem coming?
My problem, and I think this is getting at the heart of what my problem with the Brosnan films are. Mm-hmm. It's the shift in tone is too nosebleedy. So you go from this really cool boat chase, tie straightening, funny joke, splashing the cops, pretty good, to the farcical ridiculous of being able to steer a boat through the streets of London. Okay, it is what it is. It's horrible. But when you go from that to 2 minutes later, there's a woman killing herself in a balloon, and then Brosnan falls on the Millennium Dome or whatever it is, and he's so hurt and so much in serious pain. That shift in tone just... it feels like it wants it both ways, and I just don't buy it.
Was your problem the lack of a double take from a pigeon?
It would have helped. This is the same reason I couldn't
the
get
whole
into
movie is this though. It's just a tonal mess.
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right about that.
Well, yeah. So yeah, Bond does take this power jet boat through the streets of London to find a shortcut to meet her up on the other end.
He turns.
Yeah. Yeah.
He turns.
On
it doesn't
streets.
Have any. Yeah. Wheels,
it's got a rudder. Got a rudder.
No. Yeah. I don't know. It's just there. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So I also wonder how authorities explain the whole situation of the balloon blowing everything. But.
So this movie came out right at the time that every young man, when you're in college and you just hate every movie unless it's really good, you know, you're snobby and
unless it's black and white and Italian.
Yeah, I even then I didn't. it just came at that time, and then that compounded with all of this stuff was, I think, has left such a bad taste in my mouth for the Brosnan side. I just got to go through some things in my life before I can reset.
I think we're going to get you there. Okay. I think we're slowly going to get there.
I went to see this at the private screening at MGM because I had covered the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I got in.
Cool.
And I was so excited, and I picked up this girl because I was taking her to the screening on the lot or whatever. So I was like, I got in late.
Sweet day.
I think I got there like just in time. But oh man.
Did you drive your speedboat there?
I drove my speedboat. I had a little Fiat convertible. So it was my Bond car. I had a little Pininfarina. So we pull in. But this movie was so disappointing to do after.
Because
I remember covering all of this boat thing, too. Because it was like, was that 5 weeks of shooting or something like that?
Because
we were getting all the stuff from London for the magazine. And I was putting all the pictures in. And I was so, so excited. But the opening does deliver. That's what I think.
Yeah. And I think that was the... It was actually hyped, that opening. And a lot of the critics beforehand were really playing it up. So I'd read like the New Yorker review. I think Anthony Lane was talking about how it was like the greatest Bond opening ever and one of the great action sequences. So I was like, okay, let's go check this out. I was like, yeah,
it's
not
pretty
bad.
Good. It's still pretty good. It's still, I think it's still
Vic Armstrong.
Up.
It's, you know.
And I think just the act of like that high speed chase then to a balloon. I enjoy that quite a bit. And I also enjoy the aspect of Bond trying to not kill somebody and saying, I can protect you and come in. We need your information. And I think that's a fucking great stunt when he drops onto the dome. And then the stunt guy kept missing that thing. And that's why they left that shot in.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
But Brosnan's acting when he's hurt that.
I'm sorry. Well,
he does some great face puffing in this movie.
It's all histrionics. It's all.
But that's another thing I like, though, is sustaining a shoulder injury that is going to bother him throughout the entire film.
I like that, too.
Well, at least
very
he didn't
Skyfall
pull a
again.
Fragment out of it. Yeah, it's the same.
But I like that, too. It's just every time someone touches him, he does that. On his lower jaw.
But you've been hurt
like
that.
A desk drawer.
You've been hurt like that. I make those expressions a lot.
Not like I looked into the sun and my wife left me and emotional and physical. I don't know. There's something too much about it.
Well, that Brosnan's Bond has a very low threshold for pain. It's one of his quirks.
You guys say about his acting in this. I think he's a lot of blasé in this, and it's kind of like the third Bond. Anytime any actor gets to like their third movie, like they've become Bond. They've traveled the world as Bond. They've done, you know, they've existed in the world as James Bond. So like something happens where there's a nonchalance. Like if you look at him in GoldenEye, I think even though he might be wooden, he's way more frail than he's in this when he's hurt, you know, quote unquote, when he's whinging from the pain.
Yeah.
But it just bugs the shit out of me. I think he'll have these great moments like with Sophie Marceau, but then other times he's just. I think I'm Bond. I'm walking around as Bond.
Yeah.
Well,
at the end of the day, he's more caricature than character to me, and I could never quite.
Well, I think what I like a lot about this particular opening is after the shoulder injury, it just melds into the opening credits.
Yeah.
And he drops to the ground and grabs his shoulder and walks off while the credits are starting.
I didn't notice that.
You didn't notice that?
No, how funny.
He drops to the ground and gets up, holds his shoulder, and walks off of the thing while Shirley Manson's. Song plays. It's not garbage, guys. It's Shirley Manson.
Well, it's
isn't
not,
it?
Well, they no, credit garbage.
Yeah.
But how much did Butch Vig do on this song?
Because David Arnold wrote it. I think Garbage and Shirley Manson performed it. But I'm going to give you.
Well, then why would they say Garbage
song.
And Shirley Manson? Just say Garbage.
Probably because they. I don't know. But wait till you hear this other song.
But this is also like 2 years after the height of Garbage popularity too. Like they kind of missed the boat.
Yeah.
Well, but isn't that often the case with Bond themes?
Uh-huh.
They're like because they must agree to this like early on, and so they set down that path, and then all of a sudden the guy, you know, they just have a knack of finding people whose careers are about ready to go in the tank. Yeah.
I remember when Aha was assigned to Living Daylights. Even then, as a kid, I'm like, really?
Yeah. I'm like, I already threw that tape away.
Yeah.
Just bring Duran Duran back.
Yeah. I think Adele's probably the most contemporary. Like, she's on the charts right now.
Yeah.
And here's the thing.
And Jack White, for better or for worse. All right, here is some kind of weird oddity. I don't know that this was ever officially considered for the film, but it's by the band Straw. It's The World Is Not Enough.
Love Straw.
And Woof. Take your time, Straw.
Already on board.
Oh, slow. That's Straw slow burn.
We've already had a 28-minute opening. We don't have time for this, Straw. This could not have been a legit.
Ivan LaBond.
With a little radio
head.
Definitely. It has like the same kind of tempo though as the Garbage Town.
Yeah. But much more languid.
Goodbye. Let's pretend
we will survive. Like he might be performing this like Perry Como in that SCTV sketch, yes, laying on a bed. That's how he records. His head propped up on a pillow.
Here we go.
Here's the hook.
I don't hate it as much as you guys.
New ringtone.
Anyway.
So, a lot of people really like the Garbage Shirley Manson song. I think it's all right. You like it a lot.
I do like it, yeah. I think if you look at the last five Bond pictures, you're looking at, I guess we have to go deeper than that now because we've had three of Daniel Craig, but the only one of Daniel Craig's that does it for me is Skyfall. And I think as far as
you
the
like
bronze,
the Cornell, huh?
I like Cornell.
I love it.
I don't like the Cornell.
I'm not a fan of Cornell.
I didn't like it when I saw it. Now I've come around.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it. I'm thinking about the Brosnan ones. I think GoldenEye's great. You got Tina Turner nailing those vocals. I mean, it's a Bono joint, but a Bono the Edge joint. And the Sheryl Crow one is my secret song that I listen
to
a lot.
Really?
I will join you in that.
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. I love that Katie Lang.
The Katie Lang song's amazing.
No, that's fine too, but I don't instinctively hate the Sheryl Crow song.
I guess I don't hate it.
But I think a lot of people felt really protective of Katie at that time, like that she'd gotten screwed, which she kind of did.
Yeah.
But,
But I do think, I really objectively think that David Arnold, Katie Lang one is a better song than that Sheryl Crow one.
Well,
so they put her on because she was bigger.
In a couple weeks, we're going to revisit that.
Yeah, that's
we're going to find out together.
That's probably the strongest bookended movie of song, though, right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what is Living Daylights when they go into that... weird pretender song. No, I'm thinking more License to Kill. Yeah, going to
Where's everybody gone?
Yeah, no, that one's all right. I mean, it is what it is, but what does License to Kill end with that, is it If There Was a Man? No, that's Living Daylights. Pretenders, If There Was a Man. And License to Kill ends with this. Hold on, I gotta turn this off.
Yeah, please.
It's like I want to say it's not Celine Dion, is it? But it's some weird light R&B pop song or something.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Well, what do you guys, what do you think of these credits? I like them.
I like
them. The oil theme is there.
Yeah.
You get the Derricks out there hanging out, doing their thing.
Not quite phallic enough.
Yeah.
Touche.
It's fine.
It really is fine. It's at its best when like the oil's pouring on nothing and it turns into a girl.
Yeah.
And the Derricks is just, I'm just looking at a bunch of CG, you know.
And we saw the oil all over the girl in Quantum of Solace.
We did indeed. And now we come out of these opening credits to Scotland.
Also used in Skyfall.
Yeah, interesting. You're saying it's weird that MI6 would get compromised and somehow they'd end up in Scotland. Which movie am I describing? So we're at the funeral where we have I love the sad African prince and princess at the very beginning.
Oh, I know.
the kings know everybody.
Yeah.
Coming to America.
And we see this castle right this, which they cut out of the movie. The shot that was going to be the next shot was going to be the DB5 driving into this.
Did they do that just for time? Because that seems.
I think they did it just for time because you do see the DB5 for a split second in the final footage when they're looking for the heat signature of James Bond. The first heat signature they're on is the DB5.
And then it was around looking.
Interesting.
I did. I'm sad. I'm a sad person. So we're in Scottish Town, and there's we first see Sophie Marceau,
Lovely.
Yeah, she's a lovely gal.
She's a great actress, too.
And yeah, I think she does a good job of being very dislikable by the end of this movie.
She's overlooked as one of the better Bond villains, because you don't immediately think of her as a Bond villain.
Yeah, you don't even think of her as a Bond villain because she's a Bond girl.
Yeah.
No, she's, as far as like an actress with like a reputation, I'd say she comes somewhere under like Diana Rigg.
But
I mean, she's in that class.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right.
You know, wow, this might be a little bit too much actress for a Bond girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Terry Hatcher syndrome, right? I mean, sorry.
But to have maybe one of the better Bond girls and one of, if not the worst Bond girl in the same movie is...
The worst.
It says everything about
this
movie.
Do you really think so? I mean, we had just watched Die Another Day, and I find Halle Berry's performance so intolerable.
It's so bad.
It's so intolerable, and
I don't think it's as bad.
What I think outweighs it is the fact that we don't see Denise Richards as much, I find Denise Richards, 1999 Denise Richards, I could just stare at her all day. I have no problem with that.
Sure.
They didn't give her a weird haircut like Halle Berry got.
But Halle Berry, I buy at least as a spy more than I do Denise Richards as a nuclear.
Yeah, but they don't just you're not just dealing with. Halle Berry. You're dealing with Halle Berry and Michael Madsen.
That's true.
Well, you're dealing with Die Another Day is just such a disaster. It falls apart as soon as like the opening credits are over. Mm-hmm. And by that time, Halle Berry is the least of my problems with that movie. So I don't know. I mean, if I were to just examine her performance, perhaps I would put
Take
her
a look
that,
at it.
That
Take
bottom rung, but. But especially the problem with Denise Richards is she's, you know, juxtaposed with Sophie Marceau.
At one point, she's in a room with Sophie Marceau and Judi Dench.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, even when Sophie Marceau's like, did you sleep with her too? Really? Like, I mean, come on.
And not to be too crude, but is she the only Bond girl with fake breasts?
Denise Richards?
Yeah. Because usually they don't go for that kind of thing.
No.
And I like that. You know, I like that they kind of try to shoot for something more real.
I think yes.
Yeah. Well, there's your lesson, everybody.
I just went through my boob Rolodex, which I keep on file. It's actually a tab. It's always open in my brain.
Mine just hits Ava Green and then I can't go away from it.
She might have even had some posterior enhancement. I don't know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. She's just like a Barbie doll.
Yeah. And they dress her just like Lara Croft
from
Tomb Raider.
And that's like a year earlier? Yeah.
Well, that's what most scientists wear in the field.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Halter, like tank top.
Yeah, we started talking about this on Pringle, but like her role is completely unnecessary in the whole movie. She doesn't do anything.
Guys, we haven't even gotten to her yet. We're still in Scotland.
Okay.
Sophie Marceau.
We're still in Scotland.
Here's what I'll say. Scotland, I love that carpet. In that castle.
I like the castle. I like the
carpet is badass.
I like the Scotland MI6. I like it. A couple things I don't enjoy about it. I don't like that. I love Bernard Lee and I love that he's on a painting on the wall, but I don't, for the sake of timeline confusion.
Yeah.
I am a little
wall breaking.
Yeah, I'm a little like
a little jarring.
Why are we doing that? Why are we establishing
I don't like that they have a medical bay in what looks like a two-story dungeon. Like, if you're going to have the wherewithal to build a whole medical unit, you don't need rock wall.
That's a...
It doesn't seem that sanitary to me.
What is her name, Doctor... He calls her Holly.
Oh, I don't know.
It's something good. It's one of those... It is a...
Is it something?
Guys,
like touch,
I have...
Touch or feel or something to it.
Doctor...
Dr. Feelgood.
Dr. Touch and Squeeze.
But here we just, again, the old Skyfall thing, clean bill of health here getting checked out.
Well, it's important. Sure. You know, you don't want to... Guys, this has a 6.3 on IMDb as far as movies go. Mm. Cigars... it's Molly. Molly Warmflash.
Warmflash, that's it.
What? Is that intend to imply like she's... Not young, but she's not old enough to have her hot flashes.
Yeah.
What does that mean? That is the worst Bond girl I have ever heard.
Is she related to Kristen Scott Thomas? Because she's Serena Scott Thomas.
Yeah, Scott Thomas. You know what? I know what
Doctor Warm Flash.
Really Doctor Premenopausal.
I know. Doctor can still have babies, but better think about getting on it.
She is the younger sister of Kristen Scott Thomas.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah. Doctor Warm Flash. Everybody listening to this, just sit down.
I think
and
she's...
think about what we've all done as a society. That is the worst name.
She might have the best ass of any Bond lady. that I've ever seen. Or maybe it was just an excellent choice in underwear by the costume department.
I can't get over Dr. Warmflesh.
But this is when this is right when Bond asks her to skirt the issue.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, skirt the issue and get a clean bill of health, which leads then to Samantha Bond delivering two of the more cringeworthy lines to the job at hand.
Yeah.
It just didn't make a lick of sense to me. But anyway, the he gets a clean bill of health so we can get back on the case. I like how he's... In the debriefing, Robinson, and I wrote it down, Robinson delivers my favorite out-of-context line I've ever seen in a movie, which is, our only lead committed suicide on the balloon. Out of context, it's...
Never been said by
what
a human
the fuck
before
does that
on this
mean?
Earth.
What is it again?
It's our only lead committed suicide on the balloon.
Oh, wait, also, we didn't mention the line, too. She's like, not from him. Mm-hmm. Keep you safe. We didn't mention that.
Yes.
Very odious.
This is when we see M. We first hear of King, and she's just sort of... Just shimmies a little, and you can see
her. Yeah, she gets a little wistful.
Gooey.
So, Judi Dench is a brilliant actress, but I even feel like she telegraphs a little bit too much here the first time he's mentioned, and she does kind of a pause.
I love... There's an interview with her, and it might be on the Casino Royale or the Quantum... discs, but there's an interview with her where she's referring to this, The World Is Not Enough, where she's talking about being in a dungeon and then like having to do something with a clock, and then she goes, I don't remember what movie was that in. I don't remember which one that was in.
That's really funny. This is the biggest M of any to this point.
Yeah.
The most M had been on screen. Yeah. So we went from like 3 days of shooting to 5 to like 2.5 weeks or something. Yeah. She got...
Well, she was a newly minted Oscar winner.
Yeah.
So
keep for that in Shakespeare in Love.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So essentially they're laying out the plan, or not the plan, but James needs to go protect Sophie Marceau and find out who's responsible for blowing up King. And they decide to, before this happens, we see Q.
Giving him the most reverse engineered gadget in the history of the Bond films. Q doesn't even know he's going to the snow. He just knows he's going to Azerbaijan oil fields.
Yeah.
So they give him a jacket that is avalanche proof.
They also, by the way, that jacket is not the same jacket he's wearing.
No, he's wearing a ski suit. Yeah.
He's wearing a whole ski suit.
But,
yeah.
But.
Well, let's back up to
Purvis and Wade to the worst.
Let's give Desmond Llewellyn his due here.
Oh, all right.
The final appearance.
Yeah. Yeah. But the arrival of Cleese, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How do we feel about this?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, he gets his coat stuck in the door.
And then looks up.
Gosh.
Like, what's the problem? And he looks up. Like the
He's in a completely different movie.
Everyone is. That's the problem. There are 8 movies going on here.
Is he...
Now, that is a tone-deaf scene right there, because countered with the, you know, ushering out...
We're
going to sweeten them by, ridiculous.
Here's the new goofy guy. Driving the boat through the streets of London, Q getting his jacket caught and looking up are in the same movie. And then Q's little goodbye and her killing herself in a balloon are in the same movie.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Q's goodbye is... When you, it's one of those moments that it's very sad, but also he looks like he doesn't want to go.
I know.
He's looking up so helpless, and as he just lowers through the floor.
You guys mentioned this before, too. He says the two things that I always told you that he's never said.
Never let them see you bleed.
It's so vague because you don't get the feeling that... If another movie comes around, they wouldn't put him in. You could just feel the producers going, this guy's probably going to die soon.
Oh, I think that's absolutely exactly what they did.
And he knows it, and you see that in his face. Like, it's basically the Monty Python sketch of, I'm not dead yet. You know, I still want to do these. No one's asked. But
You were talking about, you know, today being sad about celebrities passing.
Yeah.
But I interviewed Desmond a month and a half before the car accident, and he was such a lovely guy.
I can imagine.
And, like, every minute of that, and, like... his favorite movie was License to Kill because he got to do all that stuff and go on location, and his eyes lit up, and he still loved to talk about License to Kill. And what a cool guy. And then when I heard that news, I had a little moment in my car.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Cause he's... Who, there's no one that doesn't love him.
And why was he driving himself around, too, at that age? He, you know, he got bonered through a lot of those movies because he was in, like, day rate for a lot of them.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, he was not getting... So, like, he was there for a day and, like, he's coming back for day rate. Oh, terrible.
How
terrible.
Old was he when he died?
I think it's like 84, I think.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
But in some ways... Probably best that his last film wasn't Die Another Day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
God, yeah. Yeah. That would be.
Yeah. But this is where we see, obviously, the introduction of R, who then becomes Q. And I say R because in The World Is Not Enough Nintendo 64 game, John Cleese talks to you, and he is in, when you are talking to him, it says R. So they actually did name
him
R.
Yeah, because in Die Another Day, do they call him anything?
They call him Q.
Okay.
Well, he finally, at the end. He says he calls him Quartermaster, and then by the end of the scene, he's grown fond enough with him to be calling him Q.
Around the that's invisible little, car.
Around the invisible. Around the invisible. SMR.
And at the end of this movie, R, when the thermograph is on that screw, and he pulls a serious bros before hose. And
yeah,
turns
he
it
sure
on,
does.
Like, let my brother
he sure does.
Yeah. His nuclear physicist.
But this is where we meet the BMW Z8 Roadster, which was manufactured for. Four years. I think there's a little over 1,500 of them that were sold in the United States. And if you want to buy one right now, they're still going for about $115,000 to $125,000.
Jeez.
And they were brand new, they were $125,000.
Wow.
Wow.
So because there's so few of them out there, it's quite a collector's item. And, you know, I say go for it. If you can afford it, get one.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. We could pull some cash.
Yeah.
It
was a big thing when...
Clarkson hated it on the second season of Top Gear.
Oh, really?
He did not. He said... And the reason his reasoning for hate it was a car that couldn't decide if it was a roadster or a supercar. I feel like that's a great car.
If you're stuck between those.
Yeah.
Well, it fits for this movie if it can't decide what
it
is.
That's very true.
The car does not do much at all.
No, it gets cut in half.
It doesn't do much.
Yeah.
You never... Very quickly. We see it drive for like a minute.
Yeah.
He's got the top down.
Yeah.
But
it's
no
a good looking
chase.
Car.
Coming off the car chase from Tomorrow Never Dies, too. Like,
I think that was sort of
what
they...
Do something.
I think that... Because they went so far from GoldenEye, where the BMW Z4 was in it, and it did nothing because and they just had to point at it because they didn't have a chance to do anything to it, a special effects team. Then they felt like, let's make up for that with this BMW four-door sedan. Let's give James Bond a sedan.
I know. That's... It might as well be a minivan.
And
it gets left in an Avis.
Yeah, it does.
Where it could have killed somebody.
Dein Büro have ein Auto reserviert? I can ask for a rental car in German because of that movie.
I can ask for a hotel room because I'm a teacher on sabbatical that won the lottery.
they went so far, the special effects team went so far to make up for the fact they didn't have any gadgets in the car in GoldenEye. So that's why there's such a crazy chase scene in Tomorrow Never Dies. And then in this one, I think, because the car did so much, they decided to peel it back and then cut the car in half as a joke.
Right. But it's an afterthought.
It really
just
is.
Feels like it just shows up, and then you know he does a little bit of what he did, and
he almost forgot that he had the car there. We're jumping way ahead, but he's kind of like, "Oh, right, the car's here."
No, it's I don't know.
Yeah, guys. It's just I liked the car, and I wish that the car didn't get cut in half.
Hmm.
I guess is what I'm gonna say.
Hmm. Yeah, it's one of the least memorable cars because it's not in the movie that much.
Right.
So yeah,
I think I have to say this. I'm just realizing this now. I'm not a huge fan of any of the Bond car gadget moments. Like, I think Bond is at his best when he's just. I don't know. They always seem a little bit too much for me. Even Goldfinger.
You don't
really
like when he
genius.
Throws the ejector seat on the guy. You don't like when he decides to put out those Spartacus-like spikes out of the side of the Aston Martin and tear through a Mustang.
Maybe I like the Living Daylights. That may be also my favorite Aston Martin.
Oh, with
too.
The skis.
Oh,
yeah. That's a great.
It was really kind of real too.
Yeah, it did seem a little real somehow. Why is that? Yeah.
So, guys, here's now where we see the hologram medical scan, which has a great Pierce Brosnan moment in it. And the moment is when he's touching touching the bullet hole, like he's touching light, not touching anything. And then the doctor starts talking, and then he gets embarrassed, and he pulls his hand out and goes, He does a very subtle.
Oh, I didn't
know.
He
does a very subtle. I'm embarrassed in front of this. Like, and I really genuinely enjoyed that.
I thought it was like a coy, like, ooh, naughty me.
Yeah. I thought it was just like, oh, the doctor just saw me do this. The doctor just saw me touch a light.
It's a little ridiculous, but I think I like the concept with this villain that he's got limited time and he can't feel pain. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I like
they
that too.
They kind of oversell it. He can't feel pain. I think it's enough. Like, he only gets stronger before he dies.
But that's he'll grow stronger every day.
Yeah. The problem with that, he can't feel pain, but then he's picking up, you know, hot
rocks.
Yeah. And, you know, you're like, okay, well, he can't feel pain, but he can scar.
Right.
He could, like, you know.
Yeah, and then he's going to blister anyway.
Yeah.
And his hand skin might fall off, which would be a problem.
I had a friend who had a left arm with no nerve endings.
And,
We were on a play once, and he was stuck to the set because his hand had gone through a nail and didn't know. Oh. But he had stuff, like, happening to him all the time just because you don't realize when you bang your hand to recoil, and he'd get it burned and all that stuff. So I would think Renard would be covered.
Yeah, just covered in scars.
Yeah, just.
Well, he's fresh.
All the shape of his stove
in this style, but his acting is so good and so subtle in this movie. It belongs nowhere in this movie. It belongs.
He does. He's doing a very, very good job.
I feel you feel so sympathetic for him at not only when it's like he can't enjoy sexual pleasure. Right? Was that the implication with?
Yeah, when he's touching her, so you can't feel it anyway.
Yeah, and she's mistreating him and using him, and you just feel bad for the guy.
Yeah.
Poor Renard.
Yeah.
Poor Fox.
Poor.
He's too good for this movie.
So, where am I? Okay, now we see Sophie Marceau doing her thing as the head of King Oil, where she saves a church. Mm. And everybody's really happy about that.
Yeah.
And
telling us she's a good person.
And then we got to go check the pipelines out, so...
Did you pack for skiing? I've never been so frustrated with locations. To me, I remember when I first saw this, like, to not know where in the world something was. It might just been my own geography thing, but I don't think they do such a... Because I didn't know Azerbaijan had snowy cliffs and all this stuff. Like, you're like, I'm learning way too much right now.
Yeah.
In this, where it feels like it's a thing.
It's too exotic.
Yeah. Is that possible?
And this is where we meet the Parahawks. This is where we meet the guys sent to kill Bond that they think the most efficient way to do this is to throw grenades out of Parahawks. That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're throwing grenades, and grenades that have so much fire in them.
Yeah.
Well, that was the problem. I mean, I know when we were covering this, they're like, we scoured the world to find the newest, coolest stuff. I'm like, why? It's so forced. If you cut this whole scene out, again, if director's cut, take this all out, much better movie. It's so silly.
Well, this is the point when Bond says, head to the trees, get for cover, I'll take him to the trees. And then he thinks he gets a guy, and a guy goes over a cliff. And then he goes, see you at the lodge. And then the face, his face is, whoa, another parachute!
Oh, my God.
How do you have two?
I just quipped you. Yeah. It's over. When I quip, you die. That is the order of things.
But he still doesn't have to worry about him because he's lower in elevation than he is. He can't come back.
But
up.
He still goes for it.
Yeah.
He still cuts his fucking with some skis.
Oh, Jesus.
But see, that's the thing. The sequence is really well staged.
Yeah.
It's I think, a great sequence. Unfortunately, it's like the fifth freaking ski scene in a Bond movie. And it just... although Arnold really kind of rouses.
Yeah, he's the best part of this thing.
Boy, he gets real close to Barry on that. And it really enhances the sequence. But yeah, there's just kind of a moment. Like, I remember there's a moment where, you know, he kind of lifts up his pole as if he's going to use it. And I was like, oh, is he going to have the rifle in there? Like in Spy Who Loved Me. Uh-huh. And, you know, there's just, it's constantly referencing the other films and you're wondering, you know, did they, you know, his new model of skis, like they decided that rifle thing was just too much?
Yeah,
that
does reference a lot of films, but in a way that doesn't go far enough, but goes too far without going far enough. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like, and here's the tonal trouble, too, because the job of it's to endear her to him. Like, he's protecting her. And this is the first time, but he doesn't do that till the end when he blows up the dumb suit or whatever.
Yeah,
but is she in danger at ever during this? I don't know. You don't feel it.
She's just freaking out. But there was a moment where she says to Bond, have you ever lost a loved one? And so then they cut to Bond, and you're obviously thinking, all right, he lost his wife. And he just does a look. And I distinctly feel that's like a look for the Bond fans, but we don't want to go as far as to say I was married once because this generation won't remember, and we don't want to do
They'll
the
be
work.
Very confused.
And we, and it just feels very
lazy. Did he marry Terry Hatcher before she died?
Yeah.
But also, I think part of it, too, is like him thinking of his parents also, I assume. You know, in the old Batman fashion. Okay, so now we get to a pretty great scene, I think, is in Baku at Tsarkovsky's casino. I enjoy the ridiculousness of the X-ray glasses. I think it's
so campy.
It's so campy, but I think in the correct way, and to be that's the introduction or reintroduction of Tsarkovsky, like, who's such a, you know, over the top Russian, you know, character that I enjoyed seeing again. Much in the way I actually enjoyed seeing Joe Don Baker a second time in Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yeah, Coltrane is really good in this. Do you guys know how they shot the X-ray thing? Because watching it, you can see that all the guns are painted white and they must have done some post-production.
It's on the special features.
It's on there.
What did they do? Everybody's wearing see-through clothes or what?
Yeah.
I think they just matted it later, wasn't they? They didn't use green screen or anything. No.
Everybody had two outfits. Everybody had the real outfit and everybody had the X-ray outfit, which was just a light, like, sheer coats with the things and everything like that.
Oh, wow.
That's interesting. Which, you know, it's always disappointing when you find out how things are done like that.
That's what it was.
But his glances in that are so over the top.
They're so over the top, but it's just because, I think it's because you're looking at, like, just women that are bent over and, like, you're imagining what he's seeing, and then when you actually do see what he sees, and this guy, if you drop him, that's James Bond's Achilles heel, is if you drop him in a room of beautiful women.
Absolutely, but he's a master spy who can avert a glaze. He's not the guy who talks to the girl. She's like, I saw you look at my boobs. You would never know if he did it. And in this, he's basically Tex Avery tongue hanging out of his mouth.
So he wants to see Tsarkovsky, so he does. We're reintroduced to him. First time we meet him, obviously, is in GoldenEye.
Yeah.
When good old Minnie Driver's up there singing.
That's another pop song. Remember we had that discussion about how many times does a pop song end up in a Bond movie? Stand by Your Man. Someone pointed that out, by the way.
Yeah, we meet Tsarkovsky. I think one of the great, great lines in Bond history, when I think is, why am I worried I'm suddenly, you know, I'm not...
More insurance.
Yeah, I'm not carrying enough insurance. Why am I suddenly worried I'm not carrying enough insurance?
Oh, yeah.
Which I think is the perfect line for a guy that's been with James Bond before, regardless of what era it is.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great line.
I think he's a little too... It's a little too comic relief-y. I feel like he just brought it back just a hair.
Maybe it's because I'm just so used to Coltrane's, like, really broad comedic stuff that here it feels like this is a model of restraint compared to, like, Nuns on the Run or something. And he is...
movie I had not thought of since...
I was thinking
I saw it on VHS.
Thing.
That's what I'm here for.
There are boobs in it, everybody. That's what I remember as a kid.
But Coltrane's having a grand time here, and it's just, it's infectious.
Yeah, it's really great, and I like seeing him again. And then Sophie Marceau comes in to do a, you know, a high card draw, which is secretly a payment for something.
A plot point? Because
that was a plot point.
Yeah.
That was a plot point.
Pays off really lightly later.
Also, I just love the idea of them somehow having to disguise the fact that they're paying. Like, there should be no tension whatsoever in the scene of, like, bury the top three, and, like, Coltrane should not have a reaction to it whatsoever.
Yeah.
He'll eventually get the money. It doesn't matter.
It's a formality.
Like, you know, you can just take the fucking certificate and then call it a day.
Put it in his money scanner to see how much money's in the certificate.
We have a smaller one than MI6.
The travel scanner.
So this is now when we see, this is the scene, after this scene we're immediately brought to the caves, to the fire caves.
Devil's Breath.
Where is this place where there's a John F. Kennedy eternal flame burning on rocks?
By this movie.
Too
exotic.
We're suddenly in the land of the lost here.
the slider, Robbie, he gives a good performance. He does the old Spectre, where he kills the guy you don't think he's going to kill, which I enjoy that.
I think had they opened, had they cut to this, this is the first time we're seeing him, and it's it's kind of a weird, like,
it's late.
He's not it's super late.
Silva levels of late.
Yeah. And it, but he doesn't, he doesn't come out. I mean, when he shoots the guy, that's pretty intense. But he comes into a negotiation, which is really peculiar. Yep. And he's not like a sinister mastermindy guy from what we've heard about him. He's like insane and doesn't feel pain. I had they cut to a scene of him beating the crap out of somebody or in something, doing something.
Mm. Maybe beating somebody up in a punching bag.
I think you're right. I like that he's not, but not for this movie. It doesn't work for this movie. But in a good Bond movie, you wouldn't want anything more, you know, because it's believable. But it's in this, it's almost not believable because it's believable.
Yeah.
Boy.
It's not a memorable entrance. Like, he's just kind of there.
And the backlighting's a little goofy.
No, the shot, like, it's the angle that Apted chose is
I'm now immediately peculiar. I'm immediately upset that I remember the name of the other two guys in the scene.
Oh, what are they?
Dr. Arkov and Davidoff.
Speaking of Apted, he's a curious choice for a Bond director. I mean, more so than most.
Well, I mean, they wanted it for all the relationship stuff, and that's. But it feels so
like
desperate.
Wasted on these Bond movies.
Yeah,
wasted. It's
well, you know, Apted had that. He could work both sides of the street. You know, he did. You know, the 7-Up documentaries.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
Renowned documentarian, but you know, he would also do stuff like the.
Coal Miner's Daughter.
No. What was the because he did Instant at Oguala, and then he did the film with Val Kilmer and the Native American.
Thunderheart.
Thunderheart. Yes. Yeah. Sorry, I was Something searching heart. For the title. But that's what Apted. You know, he could make that conventional action film. So. It's not the weirdest choice, but he is kind of.
He's done two episodes of Masters of Sex currently on Showtime.
Awesome.
He's done a Ray Donovan. This is what he's up to lately. He did Chasing Mavericks, which I didn't see. It's about surfing a giant wave.
Good, actually.
And one of the Narnias.
Huh. Wow, did he really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
But yeah, so it's
but pre-Bond.
Right. Pre-Bond, yeah. Pre-Bond, you're looking at. Obviously, the Up documentaries.
Rose in the Mist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Stardust. 1974 Stardust, everybody.
Mm. I didn't realize. He did Coal Miner's Daughter? Did you say that?
No, I think you said that.
No, I didn't. Someone else.
Who said that?
I thought he did.
Oh.
Yeah, he did.
Right, yeah.
He did.
I
1980.
Was I was doubting it, and then I was...
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
But, you know, Thunderheart was kind of like the one that I was thinking of that's just like... Yeah, it's an action film with a little something on its mind, but...
He also did Nell and Gorillas in the Mist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An action film with something on its mind. I love that description. That could be its own genre.
Yeah.
What is another action film with something on its mind? What would that be?
Chain Reaction?
Patriot Games?
Chain Reaction!
No, that was...
Chain Reaction, everybody.
Oh, my God. Action film with something on its mind.
Do you realize that we're this far into the movie and we have... Like, we're this far into the podcast, rather, and we have yet to get to... We're just about to get to Denise Richards' appearance in the movie. So let's do the... I'm going to do a little shorthand here. Bond decides to kill Davidoff or to hop in Davidoff's trunk of his Land Rover... And sort of does a little improvisation. I do like the look that Brosnan gives when the trunk is opened. The little smirk and then punch in the face.
Have we skipped where he and Sophie Marceau have done it and you get one of the rare nipple slipples in a Bond movie?
We did skip it. I'm sorry.
That and Diamonds Are Forever are the only
nipple slipples.
Yeah, not including the pre-title sequence or the title sequence.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of those.
Boy, I don't mean to be so boob-centric today.
No, I mean,
that's usually your Elektra's cleavage in the casino alone, just plowing through there. It's mesmerizing.
Plowing through there. Dr. Christmas Jones is going to be introduced to us all. By the way, I like that James Bond's universal exports ID is essentially a college ID that was laminated
poorly.
No, that was laminated by Blockbuster, and he just happens to have his picture on it.
Do we see the universal exports thing in the other Brosnans? This is the first reference. Does he use it in the other?
He does.
Tomorrow Never Dies?
Yeah, well, he used it in Dine of the Day. He says he's from universal exports.
Right.
And
I meant previously to this ID popping up. I didn't know if it was
I'm trying to think of it. Dine of the Day, No, he's a banker.
What was the shorthand they had for that you caught that one time? The abbreviation?
Oh,
Univex?
Univex, yeah.
Univex.
What movie was that?
I think that's a Craig movie.
Yeah. Quantum or something?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Univex. So here we are. It's Christmas Jones. He now has to take the position that Davidoff is going to take as this rogue doctor at this nuclear missile silo. They're trying to de-dangerfy the bombs.
Sure.
And Christmas Jones is in charge of this whole operation.
Boy, does she run him through the
good
ring.
Good Lord.
Don't say any jokes. I've heard all the jokes.
I don't know any Dr. Jokes.
Pretty clever. I guess I'm into you now.
That's the moment. You look at her face. Yeah. That's the moment she decides
that's
to fuck him.
That's the only acting she does.
That's the moment she decides to fuck him.
When I interviewed her for this, I was under the impression that I don't think she ever read any part of the screenplay that wasn't hers. Yeah. She had really no idea what was going on.
Wouldn't matter.
Well, no.
No. She was brought in as window dressing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I don't think she'd seen a Bond film either before. Yeah.
But I mean, I want to know what the decision-making process was on that you're going to have a nuclear physicist,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to cast, like, a WB-level actor.
I can't understand it.
It just baffles me, because the film is playing, you know, I'd kind of said that it reminds me of For Your Eyes Only in the way that it's kind of a serious Bond for the most part,
mm-hmm.
And then you all of a sudden you bring in this element that is just... so laughable and so misjudged. Yeah. I mean, it throws the movie completely off balance. And whatever was interesting about it, the minute she shows up, I'm just
she
just
should have been like Tanya Roberts' part in View to a Kill. Where, seriously,
yeah. That's as bad. Yeah.
Were there ever any alternate choices that were up for that role? I'm gonna look that up.
I can't remember just like when they flew her to London for the screen test, and then we knew.
Listen to this bit of trivia that I just was reading. Joe Dante and Peter Jackson were offered the opportunity to direct this film.
Oh my God,
that would have been amazing. Barbara Broccoli enjoyed Jackson's Heavenly Creatures, and a screening of The Frighteners was arranged for her. She disliked The Frighteners and showed no further interest in Jackson.
Wow.
Oh, hey, you guys were talking about Barbara, like having a little crush on her.
Yeah.
It was really great. So
we love her.
I know, yeah. But it's a very funny Barbara story. So when I was working for the foundation, we used to go to Cubby's house a bunch to like go shoot his Thalberg Award and like do all the stuff. And so I met her a bunch of times. Cut to like 3 years later, after I'd quit the magazine and stuff, I was working, driving limos. And who do I pick up? But Barbara Broccoli.
Oh my God.
She gets in my limo, we're driving, and I'm like, do I say anything? Like, hey, actually, I was taking her to the house, and I go, I've actually been to your house before for the Infamy Foundation or else. Da 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 da. I haven't met you. She goes, that's nice.
Iced me.
And then when I was unloading her bags, it was the most uncomfortable moment. But she is lovely.
That is, that is upsetting to me. I don't want that to happen. I was looking for some sort of like who else was up for this role of Denise Richards, and I can't see.
She was top of the list. They got her. They shut down. They were like, we are good to go.
They wrote the script around her.
Do you think we'll get her, guys?
Yes. All right. Well, hey, listen, you win some, you lose some, guys, and we definitely lost this one. We're at the nuclear site. This is where Bond encounters
Renard.
Mm-hmm. And this is a good meeting.
I think this is a good meeting
of Bond and villain.
Where are they?
They're in the
basement of the silo.
Yeah, they're in the silo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Bond briefly gets the upper hand.
Very much so. And Bond, you know, very much, I think, yes, I'm going to, as soon as I put the silencer on it, I'm going to blow your fucking head off. And mm-hmm. I believed that, and I enjoyed that. And it's like what a logical step would be for James Bond to do, and not a sort of situation where you're watching a James Bond movie going like, why are you doing that? You should be doing this. This is a very logical step. And then it gets interrupted by the foreman who had been alerted by Dr. Christmas Jones that this movie needs to go for another 2 hours.
Denise Richards was attracted to the role of Christmas Jones as she found the part to be brainy, athletic, and had depth of character. A change in direction from previous Bond girls. Audiences did not agree and often consider Christmas to be the worst Bond girl ever. This was the first Bond film to win a Razzie in the category of Worst Supporting Actress for the same reason. Wow.
She deserved that Razzie.
She
really, 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 really did.
Yeah.
But I like this Carlisle. I think this Carlisle Brosnan scene's great. I think they're both giving par performances.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that, everybody.
Agreed. I'm with you.
like this whole, like this could have been such an amazing movie. That's why.
Yeah, there's parts of it that are very, very promising, and there's parts of it that are the most ridiculous.
You know, just needed another, you know, hour or two in the oven. It, like, just in the writing of it, you know, if they, you know, but.
This is when we see now, this is when we see the Omega.
The Batarang?
The grappling hook Omega. Man. What is the, sorry, what are you, you're sorry. Making a face, Matt?
There was an alternate consideration.
Oh boy.
Tiffany Amber Thiessen.
Thiessen.
Oh. Thiessen.
Sorry, either way.
Better
sorry.
Actress, yeah. actually.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it would
she probably
be,
still would have taken the Razzie home for this one.
Now, yeah. apparently...
Well, there's what? Part of me that's like, watching this movie last night, I was Craig Rowan, who's a writer on At Midnight with me, improviser from New York, he and I were watching it, and we were sort of discussing whether or not it was the script being bad as far as her dialogue is concerned, or if it was really just her performance. And there was a moment where we realized it was her performance, and the moment is when she's in the scene with Coltrane and Brosnan, and if you listen to the dialogue that Brosnan and Coltrane are saying, it's just as stupid and just as ridiculous as what she's doing, but there is no... There's nothing behind her performance. There's right. There's no emoting on the face. It's all very wooden. It's all very monotone.
The same tone throughout
well,
the movie.
But yeah, it is. But I also feel like she's trying to be taken seriously. Like she's mm-hmm. like, I'm playing this as if yeah. I know what I'm saying. and it just it fails so spectacularly on that count that you end up with this you know.
Matt, you drive this train for a second.
Cut out of this movie, though. You have the exact same movie. If you cut her part out,
you really do. She does yeah. nothing that no one else could do. You know what I mean? It's yeah. she does. She doesn't. The bomb. He decides I'm not going to defuse it.
Yeah,
which is what her main function there is. She does let him out of a. She does let him out of a locked area of the submarine.
Sure. Yeah.
After yeah. you know.
You helpful. Tell me to drive
but
it for a second.
He could have thrown
did,
a knife at the
I was
button.
Look up something.
Yeah. Miss. We have another alternate callback. Song that I have that I thought was for Tomorrow Never Dies, but it's actually for The World Is Not Enough. And it's an interesting choice. It actually grew on me. I really like this song. It was written by David Arnold, sung by Scott Walker. Just check this out. This is real.
What film was this for?
This is for The World Is Not Enough, like the wow. end credits song, apparently. But it's super. It's so 60s.
Yeah.
It almost seems like a joke, but it's not.
I've driven for days. I've tried.
It's called Only Myself to Blame.
In so many ways.
This is very From Russia with Love.
Yeah, yeah, super From Russia with Love.
Matt Monroe.
Yeah. All right, I'm gonna play a clip.
Okay, let's.
This is the clip. This is the clip from the
Scott
moment.
Walker, sorry, the yeah. sun ain't gonna shine anymore. Scott
yeah,
Walker.
Yeah, okay. But it's got some great muted trumpet in there.
Let me grab that. Yeah. Like grab that chord there.
Yeah, that's music for a rainy Bond day.
Yeah,
a rainy Bond day.
That's like when he's going to the grave of Teresa, and he's just.
Do you think he'll ever revisit the grave of Teresa?
Maybe.
Hopefully
I hope
not,
so.
Because yeah. it says 1938 to 1972.
Yeah. Because Bond, the Fleming Bond, was born in 1924, I think. Yeah. I just read the new Bond book, and I really kind of liked it, actually.
Well, I always wondered if they would just say, oh, screw it, we'll just bring Teresa back, like, you know, because the continuity is just, you know, it's out the window.
Like, do it again,
and,
you mean?
Yeah, like, do On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
I would love that.
Again.
That would be amazing.
I wish they would start remaking some of the novels.
Well, yeah, you could do that and find a way to just use John Barry's score again.
I'm interested to revisit Never Say Never Again, just to see how much better it is than the slow-moving Thunderball. I don't know that it's better, because I haven't seen it since the late 80s.
It's more entertaining.
Yeah,
is it?
Yeah.
Than Thunderball?
It may not be better, but it's more entertaining.
Well, Thunderball's one of those that I thought I'd loved when I was a kid, and I went back to watch it, and I was like, boy, this is...
Yeah.
It's long. I still love it. I still really love it.
So here's a little bit of the Coltrane juxtaposed with Denise Richards, juxtaposed with Pierce Brosnan. This is the scene from the... Scene from the caviar factory. Sophie Marceau taking the phone call from Goldie.
Bob's
Goldie, of course, a popular rapper at the time in England.
Dating Bjork.
Dating Bjork. Yeah. Oh, is that what he was?
Just a DJ.
Yeah. Good lord.
Who are you? And how did you get in? I'll call security and congratulate them.
This is great. This is great. Yeah.
Can't you just say hello like a normal person?
Get lost.
This is...
No. Down the back.
This is good. I think this is good Brosnaning.
Yeah.
What's your business with Electra King?
I thought you were the one giving her the business.
Oh.
She drops $1 million in your casino and you don't even blink an eye. What's she paying you off for?
You know, if I were you, a relationship with a man like that, I wouldn't bet on it.
Good Foley work.
That's nothing compared to what a 20 megaton nuclear bomb can do.
What are you talking about?
We had a nuclear bomb stolen this morning.
Bernard and Electric King are working together.
I didn't know.
Well, what do you know?
And then we see the, I'm going to say the most unnecessary device ever attached to a helicopter.
Wow.
Yeah, a nuclear bomb
attached here. But, like, if you're listening...
He even looks at her like, we don't need it.
Yeah,
we
just slow down. Yeah. Oh, we got it.
The look is not like a character, not like Christmas Jones. It's like... We don't want this line in the scene, right? We're going to cut this.
Yeah.
That's the understanding. He looks at the camera.
It's really... But that's the moment where you realize how out of her league she is in this movie. I think this is the better... I really do think that these performances from everybody, including M, I think this is the best of the Brosnan era as far as acting performances go. For villain, I might give the edge to...
Sean Bean?
Sean Bean's very good, but I don't think I feel
acting
like
wise, I don't think so.
I feel like Bond villain wise, I feel like God, what's his face?
Not
Tomorrow
John
Never Dies.
No.
Oh, John.
I feel
Price.
Like he's so over the top in the best Bond way possible.
All right, as long as we're qualifying.
I think in the best in the
Tomorrow's News Today.
Yeah. I think that is just that's got the all time.
He fits the tone of the film better. That's
did you
for sure.
Did we catch the Michael G. Wilson cameo in this movie?
No, but
I
it
didn't
was
either.
Time to
I didn't either.
Play spot the that. Michael G. Wilson.
I'll go back to Brosnan in this at the junket, because this is what I'm talking about, like him kind of like swaggering through this at moments. Mm-hmm. Like he's got some great stuff in the paint. But I asked him, what do you want everyone to remember you for through the Bond series? I go, you know, this might be your last one. You might have one more. He goes, I'd like to be remembered as the guy who kills him off. I'm like, were you fucking
Michael
dick?
G. Wilson?
No. This is Brosnan.
No, Brosnan. Wow.
I want to be the guy who kills him off.
Oh, boy.
Well, he was well on his way.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, Brosnan was the one, because I interviewed him later for some awful lawyer comedy with Julianne Moore. And, And he, but, he, you know, I asked him about, you know, Die Another Day and kind of the failure of it. And you know, and he was very open about the fact that he was like, I wanted to make a serious back to forming Bond. It was like, that's what the opening of the film is. That's what you're seeing is what
for
the Bond I
for which
for one? Die Another Day.
Oh, right.
And he was like, that you're seeing what you're seeing there is like what I wanted to do with Bond.
Yeah.
And he was like, and then it became another movie.
Yeah.
But he has the power to stop that. I don't know what.
I don't know how powerful the actors in the Bond contracts are. I really don't.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Michael G. Wilson again.
Oh, no. Well, that's really what I'm talking about. Michael G.
Wilson.
Really?
What is my problem?
No. This was Brosnan. And,
no.
Yeah.
And they're really all. I think they're really. Yeah. Even Daniel Craig, I think, is really at the whim of whatever Broccoli and Wilson want to do.
Michael
By
G.
the way, they're getting Producers Guild Awards,
yeah.
the two of them.
Yeah.
So do we sneak over? To the dinner?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah. She loves
it.
You. Let's do this.
Remembers me like no business.
Michael G. Wilson is in the casino when Electra is signing her $1 million check. He's in the background in a tuxedo.
Kids, look for that.
Yeah,
look for that.
Michael G. Wilson.
It's very easy to spot in Tomorrow Never Dies. He even has a line.
Mm. Yeah. You know who else has a cameo in that? Oh. Gerard Butler.
Ooh. Does he really?
He's in the opening, like naval...
He plays the butler?
Yeah.
He plays the butler.
Let's talk about how M is dressed like a Bond villain in this movie.
She's dressed like Donald Pleasance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She's dressed exactly like Donald Pleasance.
Yeah.
Okay. So we talked about this scene. Now, I don't remember if this scene, guys, refresh my memory, if this comes after or before the pipeline. That's after the pipeline, the caviar scene, correct?
Oh. Good question.
Wow. We've just
totally...
And then I yes okay
no pipeline's next yeah
pipeline this is I don't know.
What are your rules and about bathroom breaks? On this?
Take one.
Yeah.
Take right. one.
At your yeah. at your own risk, you are now bag. Off the podcast.
No, no, no.
Store won't reopen.
We're going to find the order of this situation. Here we go. This movie is too convoluted for its own good.
It doesn't matter.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Like, as I was convoluted. Watching it, I was having trouble following it a second time, and yeah. I was like, is this even being paid off? Is this just like kind of – it feels like it's a lot of like just story ideas that got wedged together.
That's what most of them are.
And that were well, yeah, that's true, but even more so in this
one. But yeah, this movie, it's got like double blinds, like – you know, she's really the bad guy, but he doesn't think she's the bad guy because the bad guy's actually working for her, but the bad guy doesn't know that he's working for her.
I know, right? How many people, the bad guy. You are kind of led to believe Coltrane's bad, but we know he's not.
Yeah.
Goldie switches, Electra switches, Renard is kind of ambiguous in some sense. Who else?
Well, hang on. Here's what I wanted to talk about. There's a scene in this movie which I think for my money is the best is Brosnan's best acting, and it is when he goes back to confront her about her mm-hmm. being in on it, and it's after the scene in the thing when his shoulder gets squeezed by thing and Robbie Coltrane Carlisle says exactly the line, what's the point in
living if you don't feel alive.
Yeah. And he confronts her about that, and I really think that's his best moment, and I'm trying to find it. And all that comes up on YouTube, of course, is the sex chair.
Isn't that also in the song? Don't they use those lyrics in the Bond song, in the Garbage song? What's the point of living if you can't feel alive? I think they do. They should if they didn't.
Yeah.
In the pipeline, they make this big like cutaway scene to, oh no, the screws are stripped. We're never going to get this off.
No. Here's what happens. James Bond says, the screw's been stripped. And then fucking Christmas Jones says, someone's tampered with the bomb, which is exactly what it means.
Yes. And then they cut away and cut back and it's dismantled.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Who knows what's in that Omega?
Do you have it? Basically saying like, do you have your Allen wrench? No, but I have my cutaway for convenient editing.
Yeah, wrench. Let's just get out of this. Well, did anyone the pipeline? You know, it's kind of a. Did anyone think of Living Daylights?
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah,
over the board.
Yeah, absolutely. And that giant Russian lady with the huge tits,
with the big boobs that the guy keeps burying.
Again, I remember boobs. I don't know what it's back, but
it's boob guy.
That's a producer's award right there.
All that is coming up
when Brosnan's in the sex.
I want everyone to look to go back to the scene where Brosnan confronts Sophie Marceau about her feeding, being the mole, being the leak, being the person that is talking to Renard. Because I think that's Pierce Brosnan's best performance.
And then he goes right to being in the sex chair where he's doing more hurt acting.
Well, that's the next time you see
him. That unhinged jaw.
Yeah, it's like a...
It's a python going after a
really
marmoset.
Is, I don't know what it is.
I don't know what this is. This is...
I love that device, though. I love that chair.
Yeah. Well, let's take a listen here.
All right.
Hang on.
This is the suit that you love that Brosnan has.
This is my favorite suit. This linen suit with this blue shirt. I wanted to buy it. It went up for auction last summer from the...
The real one?
Yeah.
Wow. How much do they want for
it? I don't... It was estimated $11,000 to $15,000.
Mm. You gotta wait for that roll back into fashion.
Yeah. Linen wrinkles, man.
Mm-hmm. Who's the guy who's got that at home and gotta explain it to his friends? No, it's called The World Was Not Enough.
Yeah.
You had her too?
I'm gonna... This up.
Yes, please. Talk about
her. I could have given you the world.
The world is not enough.
Foolish sentiment.
Family motto.
Title of this movie.
They were digging near here and found some very pretty vases. They also found this chair.
Digging
this chair.
They found it in the ground.
Look at him go.
When she shows the chair, does he faint? Does he kind of like do a, oh, no, not the chair.
I've been there before.
Yeah.
I think we ignore the old ways at our peril. Don't you?
Where's Em?
Soon she'll be everywhere.
All this? Because you fell for Renan.
Think that'll come in handy, yeah. Guys. The hat next to the gun.
Five more turns and your neck will break. I've always had a power over men. When I realized my father wouldn't rescue me from the kidnappers, I knew I had to form another alliance.
You turned Renard.
Just like you. Only you were even easier. I told him he had to hurt me. He had to make it look real.
Does this part affect you, the bad CG?
Oh, yeah, a little bit. Yeah. It's not that horrible, and I understand that's how they have to do that. But for the 1999,
yeah,
it's better than the Silva thing.
You killed your father.
Facial collapse.
He killed me the day he refused to pay my ransom.
Was this all about the oil?
It is mine.
That jaw.
Mine. And my family's.
It's just acting. It's
runs
pure
in my
acting.
Veins,
it's like when he
blood.
Choked on the shrimp in Mrs. Doubtfire.
He was allergic.
Everything he does is life or death, even
my
like write a check.
Name, the glory of my people.
No one will believe this meltdown was an accident.
Ha! They will believe. They will all believe. You understand? Nobody can resist me. You know what happens when a man is strangled?
It's the first time we all heard about autoerotic asphyxiation.
It's too late.
For those of you at home, she's straddling him now.
Yes. Thigh exposed.
Yeah.
You should have killed me when you had
You could take a nap on how far his bottom jaw.
What do you guys think of the, what do you guys think of how the, whose choice was it for Brosnan to kill her but then weirdly loom over her?
Yeah, that I think kill her and be gone. Like if you're gonna kill her, you're done with her.
Yeah,
that and that's the staging of that is troubling.
Yeah,
like, it's I'm really like, weirdly
what?
Shot.
Yeah, yeah. He, like bends over. I'm like, well, what are we doing?
Yeah, and
here?
The way she falls on the bed. Even,
well, it's also
kind
not
of peculiar.
Let's not
yeah.
forget that how James found her was he had the card that was taken out of the warhead, gave it to M. M had it in her pocket. Then in an abandoned lighthouse that probably hadn't been occupied for many years. There was a clock that still had a working 9-volt battery.
And then she made a bomb out of the light bulbs.
Yeah, and she's able to use that battery to power the locator car. But when she follows him up and he kills Elektra and there is that weird moment, even M's like, ugh.
Yeah.
This is awkward.
Yeah,
I know we pay him to do these things, but I don't ever want to see it.
Yeah.
I just love that we get M doing all the cliched, like, how am I going to get out? Like, it's like a Western,
yeah.
You know, like, I'm
yeah,
trying to get the keys.
Well, I said my parents
like, the Caribbean.
You have the dog with the keys.
Yeah.
We didn't mention the world's not enough, the family motto coming out of
right.
Yes. Honor
Is that
Majesty's
the only
Secret
Fleming
Service.
Link to this? That's one segment we sometimes do. Fleming versus Eon. Is there any other Fleming?
That's about it.
Yeah.
Orbit something some or
yeah I mean that yeah that's yeah nonsense orbit I think or something
yeah.
like that yeah I think that is all the Fleming that's, to this
yeah
no sorry the Parahawks were big in
let's not forget Christmas Jones, of course, a classic
Fleming
Ian Fleming
character.
Bond yeah. character
Electric King that's a good interesting name. It's not crazy sex name.
Yeah.
Dr. Warm Flash. Oh my
boy.
God.
Dr. Molly Warm Flash.
Yeah, Elektra is a classic.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Greek. Nick. Yeah.
But definitely. Well, let's we're winding down okay. on this film here.
But there's like an hour left.
Yeah.
That's in the movie.
There's an hour left. Let's talk it's about the summer. Death of Zarkovsky. I liked it.
Yeah, and so he could kill Elektra, but he knows Bond will still be stuck in the chair. So
yeah.
he opts with his last shot to free Bond, make it look like he's
with his cane gun.
Why is it me? Like, I feel like that's a lot for your 1999 audience to figure out for some reason. I don't know why. Is that
no? I think that they figured it out.
It's just me being proud of my own mediocre intellect.
Yeah. No, I think that was really
but
great.
But that's another shift in tone for me. Like, I think that's too. It's got a good amount of character ambiguity, and when they're spelling so much other shit out for you and don't even know what their own plot means half the time, like, it doesn't fit with
sometimes that's life.
That Coltrane stuff, though, too, when he's running with the machine gun, it's the goofiest, most awkward handling of a machine
when
gun.
When he's getting out of the boat?
Yeah,
because he's made himself vulnerable for a good 5 seconds while he's just trying to look where he's stepping. And then he just raises up and shoots a bunch of people.
It's like those Stormtrooper outtakes they just released. It's kind of like goofily.
But yeah, I think he dies valiantly. I was sad to see him go, hoping he would return again. Yeah. But, you know, now that's really out of the question anyway, so I'm glad he got closure on his character. And he's functioning essentially as the Felix Leiter of this movie.
Yeah.
And then shit goes down. He kills Elektra, just shoots her right in the neck with a I think it's a Beretta.
He should have shot her for her earlobe.
Yeah.
Oh.
Just to match
the deformed ear.
Yeah.
And then he puts the gun in his belt, takes off the jacket of that gorgeous linen suit from Brioni, and dives into a wet dock.
Yeah, it's harboring a gorgeous Brioni submarine.
I was watching again. That was all a model, that submarine.
It looks great.
Really good.
Yeah. Chris Corbald, he's also like a modern day hero of these Bond films. He does amazing work, and he's doing all the Nolan films too. And he's doing the new Star Wars, I think, for the visual effects.
Oh, he's doing the model work for that? Yeah. That's great.
But he does more than that. I mean, he did the whole, like, Venice house on a gimbal at the end.
Right.
Some of those were miniatures, but the full set and everything.
Wow.
He's great.
No, it's beautiful work.
Yeah. And so he goes, he dives down and enters through the porthole just before it's about to close. Then there's a whole thing of him going out of a porthole, holding his breath for about 4 minutes while he comes in the other porthole.
Breath acting.
Yeah.
You think it can't get worse than his hurt acting. It's his out of breath.
Well, if you want to see breath acting, you just take a look at Star Trek IV. That is about 4.5 minutes that Shatner's underwater for.
I love the Bond scenes where it's contingent on his lung capacity. Yes. You know, where he's got to hold his breath. That's a recurring thing.
Wouldn't it have been kind of awesome if he had pulled out the Thunderball
rebreather?
Yeah. Which I believe he has in
Die Another Day.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. He has it in Die Another Day. I don't know why he wasn't prepared with that and put it in his ski jacket. Yeah. Might need them both.
Because it wasn't the anniversary film.
This whole weird, unexplained, but take it as given process of turning plutonium into these gold plutonium rods, and they have to go in a certain speed and order. Yeah.
And you can hydraulically relaunch them if you find the right one on the Simon keypad or whatever that is.
I couldn't care less, you know?
I just find myself wondering, you know, how there's no radioactive material getting out. Like, I mean, obviously, you know, they must have thought this through, and I just don't, you know, I needed Christmas Jones to explain.
They make a comment.
They say it a lot.
She says,
it's safe. Touch it.
Yeah.
Well, that's it, though. I'm like, but why is it safe?
What I said while I was watching that was, and 3 years later, all those actors developed hand cancer.
This was the Bonds the Bond films version of the John Wayne Genghis Khan?
Yeah, where the family thinks he got cancer from that.
Yeah, well, almost everyone who worked on that film got cancer or something.
What was on set that was?
They were shooting close to
a Nevada test site.
Yeah,
no kidding.
Oh wow!
Oh my God, wow.
For this, though, like, I think the whole thing set in the submarine, like, it's just, it's not exciting, really. I mean, like,
it's all right. I mean, I like the idea that the submarine totally just goes nose down, and then they're having to climb through the submarine as opposed to, I mean, at least they...
Didn't the last one end on a boat, too, in a high-tech
boat? Yeah, on a boat, not a submarine. Different thing.
Carlisle stuff, though, is great, when the whole realization, you know, that when Elektra's dead and all that.
Oh,
that was really great.
Yeah, when
good.
He tells her...
denouement.
That's a great line.
You also, feel for him. He's too good for this film.
Also, there's a little acknowledgement, I think, from both actors, or rather from both characters, to each other of like, we both got fucked over by this girl.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's looking up at Brosnan going, thank you for killing me. Like, thank you for finally killing me.
Yeah.
Like, there's a nod of like, thank you.
For this film. Because it just seems out of place.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
He should be in a Craig film. I wish he would have been.
That would have been.
Craig
Too bad. But then, you know, shit goes down. they make sure to say it's underwater, so the reactor's going to be safe. Now let's launch ourselves out a torpedo tube, breathe the whole way up. And then
they didn't get the bends.
Yep, they didn't get the bends because she was exhaling the whole way up. And then the movie essentially ends.
Yeah, it was so fast of an ending. It's
they almost all are.
And then super crisp and cleaned up though, having that rooftop moment.
And then the worst. And then line the worst in line Bond in the history of
James Bond.
Yeah.
Which is
who's gonna say it? Who even wants it to come out of their mouth?
We all know it. We don't even need to say it, right? We all know it.
The name's Bond, James Bond.
that to me is it's two things. They're like whatever lapse in judgment that allowed them to hire Denise Richards allowed them to use that line. Or they hired Denise Richards, saw what they got, and went, "What the fuck? Let's just go all the way."
I wonder if it was if they had that line in their back pocket and were like, "We have to name a character Christmas."
Yeah.
So we can finally use this line.
So much.
I bet you're right, because that's how they do all the gadgets. They reverse engineer.
That's the ski jacket of.
Yeah.
You're right.
Because I know. I seriously, I wouldn't doubt it. Yeah. I guess it is. It's one of the worst exit lines. But
I vividly remember the audience groaning.
Yeah, me too.
I saw this in the theater.
I was one of them.
Opening day in a suit.
But I mean, I expected it. Like when I heard that when I heard that her name was Christmas Jones, there was just a part of me that was like, why would? Oh God, no!
I think it's supposed to be a Polynesian character too. Initially, like I don't know what the point of that was.
She was like going to be an insurance adjuster or something.
Yeah,
I was 16. And I was like, really? Girls don't come.
Yeah, she was not always going to be this.
At least that makes
the technical acumen. When the screening, when I saw this at MGM, I'd given my buddy, who was a big Bond fan, a ticket too, and he was so incensed, he left like immediately after that line. And like I tried contacting him for like a couple hours afterwards. He was so mad at the movie.
Wow. Yeah. Well, there you have it, guys. That's the world is not enough.
And it really was.
These Brosnans, man.
These Brosnans.
I gotta work.
We're gonna figure it out. We're gonna figure
it's
it
weird.
Out.
Like, oh man, is it just that the time was there? No, like, it's such a weird thing with the Brosnans.
I've said this before as well, but they also are coming at a time when all these other movies are doing Bond better than Bond, like Die Hard and stuff
that.
And they just are not. They're parodies. They're totally self parodies. Roger Moore was the first era to make it a fun, campy thing, and now they're just
it's interesting in the time, because View to a Kill had been such a like, oh god, this franchise is really going in the toilet, and GoldenEye kind of restored it. And so we there was always that sense that we wanted Brosnan to be Bond, that he should have been Bond earlier, and and so you get through the Daltons and you finally get the Bond that you wanted, and it feels like it's a little too late.
Yeah. Now, you guys probably know the answer to this. Was the 1989 to 95, was that lawsuit lapse? Was that like they were still dealing with McClory?
It was after License to Kill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they stopped down for 5 years, essentially, because of that lawsuit.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I wonder where we would be right now.
Yeah, because Brosnan, they were planning the third Dalton, right?
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
We were talking about this, how Dalton showed up on the Eon documentary.
But
this is the first time he kind of talked, because he wouldn't do any of the wouldn't do any special editions
for
us.
Intense.
He was still so angry about
his scenes
the
in that documentary are intense. I love it, but he's like
so passionate.
He's like
about
a madman. I gotta watch those again.
They're really great,
because he's got kind of longer hair and he doesn't quite look like himself. Yeah. He just looks like this guy they found in a Scottish Highland.
He's super Welsh.
He's in a Welsh under a bridge, and they just can you talk about Bond? You're damn right, I can. We were doing it.
Finally.
We were doing it.
We were living it.
It's just insane.
Yeah.
Well,
that was the world.
Guys, we did it. Derek, Jeremy, thank you for joining us and giving us your insight. Yeah. It provided much needed critical and Bond expert insight that we've
so inside
for better
baseball
or for worse been for, lacking. Yeah.
Yeah. No, listen, the kids love it. Kids out there listening to this, they're loving it. Do you guys have, would you guys like to plug anything? Twitter handles, things of that nature?
I'm at the Derek Miller.
Nice. I am at Mr. Beaks altogether, MrBeaks. Mm-hmm. And you can also read my work at Ain't It Cool News under the Nom de Plume, Mr. Beaks.
Mm.
Nicely done.
Matt, anything for you?
Keep watching At Midnight. At Midnight on Comedy Central. Follow me on Twitter, Matt Myra. Also, we might miss a week. I was just looking at my scheduling, and We might it might be a couple weeks before the next episode.
Is that true?
But we're going to try our best not to make that happen. But I just wanted to pre-prepare you in case it does happening. Don't worry, we're going to be back. I just happened to mistakenly book a trip when I probably shouldn't have booked a trip.
We're going to pull a 1989 through 1995. Because we're probably going to have to miss a week.
We have a lot. I'm out of town
at New Year's anyway. Yeah. I mean, unless we can record ahead. But we'll do what we can. But is our next guest confirmed?
That's sort of the situation. Okay. Probably if our scheduling happens the way it's supposed to happen, Paul Scheer will be our next guest for Honor Majesty's Secret Service.
All right, everybody. James Bond will return.
Sorry, you guys.
Secret Service. Bye. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
Hey, this is Arnie Niekamp from the improv fantasy podcast Hello from the Magic Tavern. I fell through a dimensional portal behind a Burger King in Chicago into the magical land of Foon, and I started a podcast. Season 3 has just begun with a brand new adventure to defeat the Dark Lord. If you're a new listener or you've fallen behind, Season 3 is a great jumping on point. And we've got great guests like Justin McElroy.
I sound like a fancy college professor. Eight nuts.
Rachel Bloom.
You all see my collection of men corpses and one woman.
Felicia Day and Colton Dunn.
You've seen me have intercourse with a variety of species.
It's a bummer.
Andy Daly.
You have the members of Genesis listed, but Phil Collins is crossed out and then circled and crossed out again.
Yes, I have killed Phil Collins twice.
Thomas Middleditch.
Jesus! I mean, Jazos, ruler of the Eighth Circle.
And that's just the beginning. Season 3 of Hello from the Magic Tavern is out now. Listen in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.